Hey everybody, welcome into the second episode of GRCast. I think that's the official name we're going with now because, well, all the really great names I think are taken, right? At this point, how many podcasts are out there using fantastic names? So, anyway, it's not really the name of the podcast that matters so much as the talent involved. And some of the talent I've got involved with me today is Matt Graukat.
Hello.
And Dio.
Hello, hello.
Live from Greece, is that correct?
Yeah, as last week, I'm still here.
Awesome. I feel like we need more people in Greece broadcasting podcast-wise all over the internet. Anyway, I think
we're gonna
go ahead and kick it off like we did last week with what you've been playing, and why don't we start with Matt this week?
Nice, because I actually know what I've been playing this week.
Scarlet Blade.
I wish. No, I haven't had much time this week. I've mainly been focusing on two different games. First is Discworld, and it's kind of an old one, so I don't know how many people can kind of realize that there's a game based on Discworld. There's actually four, but I'm playing the first point-and-click one. It's a bit of a classic, because it's partly because of its voice cast. I mean, you've got Eric Idle playing Rincewind. The voice cast is Rob Brydon, before he was Rob Brydon. Tony Robinson. And there's some other people in there. But also it's infamous because it is just one of the most difficult point-and-click games you want to name. There's a valid complaint about point-and-click games that sometimes the puzzles be a little bit overcomplicated. You need these items that perhaps you wouldn't naturally think that you would want to use. And Discworld is really the very pinnacle of that problem. I mean, there's... The story is based on Guards, one of the early Terry Pratchett books, and basically what it is that a sect have summoned a dragon, and as Rincewind you have to stop that dragon, and you have to get a gold item from each of the sect members, and it is just one of the most difficult things. Five or six different sect members, and each have a gold object, and for instance, there's one bit where there's you have to go into the shades and there's a thief hiding in like a little crevice, but you can't actually get to there. You need a ladder, but you can't just put down a ladder. You have to soften the other end of the ladder so that it doesn't wake the thief up. To do this, you have to read a bit of graffiti on the inside of a toilet door. Which says to go and see. Which says you have to go and see Big Sally at a for a special at a brothel. Go and see Big Sally, and her special involves egg and flour and some other things. It's just basic ingredients to custard, and you have to travel the world trying to find the ingredients to custard. Then you give the ingredients to Sally. You go inside the brothel. You come out with a bra. And you put the bra on the end of the ladder to soften as you drop the ladder. Now just imagine, this came out in 1993, 1994. There is no internet to find out how to do this. It would just drive you mad. And it sounds easy because I've just given you the linear version. But there is no indication of what you need, the ingredients. So, and that was actually one of the easier puzzles.
That sounded obnoxious.
There's another where you have to go to a bar, and there's a guy who's kind of really scared, and he tells you that last night he was mugged. Well, not mugged. His hotel room was broken into by a ghost. And later in the game, you go in time, and you have to go into his hotel room, put a sheet over your head, and reenact what he tells you happened in the bar. And you do that, and then something else comes up that he never mentioned. So you have to go forward in time and then ask him for the next bit of the story so that you can go back and reenact the whole thing.
Wow.
This was pre-game FAQs. So...
Wow.
But it is a fantastic... It's got Eric Idle in, and it is so funny. And it's a very... it's very well made in terms of the world of the Discworld, and it's well worth a pay. For pretty much anyone that's got the chance for it. My second game, Joe, you might want to do the fanfare, I've been playing the first Bioshock.
Oh yes. My god.
Peer pressure wins out. I'd fancied it since Infinite came out. I'll be honest, it got great reviews, and Infinite really be in the mood for it. So I was going to play it one way or another anyway. But Joe's bullying it did off.
It finally pays off.
I started it. Yeah,
nice after, work, Joe.
After 4 years. I found something out about BioShock fans this last week, and that is that, you know, when you say something negative about Justin Bieber on Twitter, well, if you say anything negative about BioShock, you get so many people trying to tell you how little taste you have and how wrong you are. There is just these people. Everyone has an explanation for why you don't think BioShock is the perfect game.
Well, they do have kind of a point.
They don't at all. Great game, and I'm really enjoying it. I think the atmosphere in the world is absolutely fantastic, is unparalleled, but the gameplay sucks ass. Anytime you have to fight more than one thing at a time, or anything that's got a little bit of speed, it is just obnoxiously difficult. And it's the controls that are against you. And I can see it being so easily fixed in BioShock 2 and certainly in BioShock Infinite, but at the minute there are times where I just feel so frustrated. There's a bit I've just done in the fisheries. You have to put your weapons in like a tube, and you go on through, and then you're ambushed by about 4 or 5 people, and then you've got a camera to the right of you, and if you get seen, then it's someone's bots. And there's a turret at the other end of the room. And there is just so much going on, I defy anyone that hasn't played that game multiple times to get through that bit without dying.
Well, all you gotta do is electrify the camera and the turret, and then hack them so they're on your side, and then they kill everyone while you run in a circle.
True that.
Yeah, I know that that's the way you do it, but, as I say, you go in there, there's no other real option, because the controls suck ass. I was just going to say, I can see why it would be a top-rated game, and it's a strong shooter, but it's not perfect. And I think there's a problem in the gaming industry right now where people are kind of going anti the big shooters. They're going anti-Battlefield and anti-Call of Duty. And I think this is kind of the other side of it, where we're not allowed to judge games that are deemed artistic or that are deemed higher purpose. We're not allowed to judge them by their faults. And you see it a lot with Journey last year, or Limbo. Limbo's the one that always winds me up, because that game got 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And it was like 15, 16 pounds. It was really expensive when it came out. And it was about 4 hours long, and it wasn't difficult. The bloody thing they did was put it in black and white. And it was nice, but it didn't deserve 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And I find the same with BioShock in some ways, that people are drawn into the world and the characters, and so they should be. But anyone that says, well, it has its faults, they're not allowed to talk, which is probably why I have so much.
I can agree with that in a way, because I actually just started playing BioShock 1 again last night. I ordered the Ultimate Rapture Edition, which has BioShock 1 and 2, and all of the DLC for both games on it. And I mostly got it because, well, I had just played Infinite. I finished Infinite, which was fantastic. And I wanted to go back and sort of compare between the two, the differences they've made and everything. And because Charles last week told me that the Minerva's Den DLC for BioShock 2 was really good, I figured I'd try that out at the same time. And man, there are things about it, especially after playing Infinite, where it's like, this is strange. This seems old when when you're just like... Yeah. I mean, in Infinite, when you start shooting at people, they're diving for cover and like falling over, like, okay, we got to get out of the way of these bullets. In BioShock, it sort of makes sense because they're basically just meth heads, right? But they just run at you. They don't even care about anything. Right into my machine guns, my grenades. I've got fire flying from my fingertips, and they're just like, doesn't matter. I'm coming up there to beat your face.
But that's another thing that I've kind of picked up on, is that start with, you go through kind of the first parts of Rapture, and there's the woman with the gun, and there's people screaming at you from the shadows. And I've played probably for about 4 or 5 hours now. And get to a point where you start hearing the same things pretty quickly. And I got to a bit after the ambush, actually, just after it. There's a room behind that you have to use your flame to, you melt the ice outside and then you can go inside. And I was stood outside the door and I just did a little test and I left it for about 3 or 4 minutes. And there was just people in this frozen room screaming at each other. And they not at each other, but just screaming randomly. And they were just stood inside. It was just like the most shooter game sort of thing. And if I'd have left them, they just kept on shouting as if they knew I was there. If they'd picked up on the fact that I was there. I think one guy said, "I'm so, so lonely," about 20 times. And he's in there with another person. And it was just like, it completely... any immersion that I'd had after just having that ambush, it was gone.
I think Bioshock Infinite fixed a lot of those problems.
Yeah, and like I say, there a lot of them are easily fixed. It's like they were focusing on the world and they were focusing on the characters, and that's fine because it paid off and it was a fantastic game. It's a fantastic game.
Have you finished it?
I haven't. I'm still on the way.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe we could discuss the ending, but next week.
Spoilers 4 years later.
Yeah, Lilith Green is people.
You have to,
but go on.
You have to at least get to the twist already. That's the whole point. That's the part that makes everybody give this game a 10 out of 10.
I think anyone that is going to game by the last 30 minutes is their opinion's not worth listening to. If I have to go through 8 hours of crap to get to a really good ending, and I'm not saying that's the case for Bioshock, just generally, then the game's not worth 10 out of 10.
No, definitely. I definitely agree with you.
Right, yeah, I'm with you too. I feel like a lot of the stuff that bothers you now was probably stuff that when this game came out in, what, like 2008 or whatever, it probably might not have been as noticeable. I don't know. I don't remember. I played it at the time and I thought it was amazing.
I thought that might be the case. And then I was thinking back at what other... I think Call of Duty 4 came out in 2007. And, you know, there were a lot of smoother shooters. And it's as I said earlier, I think they were focusing so much on the world that it kind of got to a point where, well, how are we going to bring together cool bits of story? And I think it got to a point where perhaps they should have focused more on the gameplay. And instead they focused on the world, which is fine because, I say, it paid off. And they now have the chance to fix the gameplay in Bioshock 2 and Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I'm playing Bioshock 1 again, there's just... I love that world so much. The whole destroyed 50s underwater thing is so cool to me. I can't decide. I don't necessarily think I like Rapture more than Columbia. I mean, Columbia is great because it looks so good and you're actually with crowds of people who aren't necessarily trying to murder you all the time or whatever, but maybe it's just a nostalgia thing. When I'm cruising around Rapture and it's dark and there's guys screaming at me from the shadows and whatever else, I'm really into it. Alright, why don't we kick it over to Dio now and find out what he's been up to?
Yeah, this past week I've been going... I'm still playing Sly Cooper Thieves in Time, just collecting bottles and everything. I love Sly. I grew up with Sly. It's just an unbelievable game for me. The team at Sunsari Games has done an unbelievable job, like putting all their love and effort and all their creativity into this game, possibly hopefully future titles. Have you guys played it? Or
I haven't. What interests me isn't the developer the one that did the HD collection?
Yeah, it is.
That's really interesting. Because it's gone from the point where they're porting a title, you know, I don't know how it happened, but imagine that they put a pitch in or something, I don't know. But it's very interesting to me that from one thing, one very small job, that it's kind of snowballed into taking control of the entire IP. And
yeah, sorry, go on.
No, you go ahead, mate.
Oh, basically, Sony didn't know what Sunsari were doing. They were, while they were doing the HD trilogy, they just, because they're fans of the game, I'm assuming, and they just did this mock-up of Sly 4, and they presented it to Sony, and they liked it so much, and they actually greenlitted it.
I mean, that's a great story.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I really hope they can continue this way. And...
yeah, definitely. What are the trophies like? Because the trophies for the HD collection were basically do everything. So I'm thinking that it's probably the same for collect all the bottles.
Yeah, you've got the collect all the bottles ones, but it's got in each chapter, in each episode, there's different arcades, and you get trophies by getting high scores on those. You get trophies by playing ping pong with Bentley, like the turtle guy.
Right.
They're quite varied, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Sly 3 in the HD trilogy, it's just an easy platinum. Just basically go through the story.
I played Sly 1 and then I played Sly 2 and I just couldn't bring myself to play Sly 3. I played them all within a very short time. And
Sly 3 is the only one that does not have bottles, so that
yeah, it would have been the easiest one.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the first one, but they changed it so much for the second one. And
one was really hard.
You think?
Not more annoying than hard, because, you know, you just have one life.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. One of the things that worried me with this fourth one, and I think the reason why it's getting mixed reviews, some people love it, some people don't, is that the original team that built Sly went on to do Infamous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and you know, Sly opened the door for so many other open world games, Assassin's Creed, and the like. And I think a lot of people felt it was kind of a step back to just do Sly 4 like Sly 3. Some people were hoping that it would much, much bigger. Assassin's Creed or Infamous size.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be a little bigger, to be honest. But even so, it's just... You just have to admire what Sanzaro have done. And the worlds are absolutely amazing. Just stunning to look at, to explore, isn't that? And that's why I was so... I'm so in between the 8.5 or the 9 for the review, which yeah. We discussed. And I eventually went with the 8.5 because they could have changed some things up. And they could add in multiplayer at some point, maybe co-op multiplayer. That would be a nice addition if it was done properly.
For the Sly games, yeah. In the past, I've seen like the graphics and everything, and I always go... Man, I really like the cell shading. For some reason, when I was a kid, I hated cell shading. When the first pictures of Wind Waker came out, I was like, "Nah, it's a baby game." I hated anything to do with it. And now, anytime someone does the cell shading, it looks so much better to me than the people who try to do fantastic graphics and then you can just see through all the cracks in the world. It's like, I don't know, I feel like more people need to use that really stylized cell shading and whenever I see Sly, I want to play it. I played the HD collection. I don't think I finished any of the games, though. Maybe this is the new one that I should go and grab.
Yeah, it's a pretty cheap price as well. Like, if you get with cross-buy and everything, it's 40 euro, 40 quid, I think.
Yeah.
And you get the Vita version for free. Assuming you have a Vita to use, of course.
Right.
Who doesn't have a Vita?
Yeah. But it's a good choice if you want to get into it again. Updated graphics engine and all that.
Ugh. Don't quit. You guys need to quit trying to sell me on games to play. I'm too busy playing games from 4 years ago. I've already played multiple times. I've got probably 6 games sitting there on the shelf that I should be playing, and I'm not.
Oh, they're still on the wrap.
Dungeon Keeper 2 last year, so I've got a real load of up to do.
Yeah, you're never going to get to play all the games you want to play. You're going to have to start making some cuts.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I feel like I just want to hear on the podcast your list of games from the past that people have said are like the genre-defining experiences that you haven't played even 10 years later.
Wow, okay. Okay, so Half-Life 2.
You, at all?
No, you know, I mean, it came out at time... Okay, first, I tried to play the first Half-Life last year, and it has not aged well. I when they brought out the Black Mesa mod, or whatever you'd call it, it's like just a whole new remake, whatever, I was going to play it again, and it's just kind of not happened. But the Half-Life games came out at a time when I only had a PS2, and I still wasn't finishing any games. So it just kind of got left the wayside. And then when I bought... when I got my first Xbox 360, which was about 3 years after the damn thing came out, I bought the orange box and played Portal. And then at that point it was kind of like, well, I need to play Half-Life 1. I keep seeing it cheap on PC. I need to play it and actually get a sense of the series before I try and play the second. And it's just one of those things that keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back.
There's no hope of you going through Half-Life 1 at this point. I mean, ugh. That game is good. Like, I remember playing Half-Life 1. I played it all the way through ages and ages and ages ago. But I had a hard time with it even when it was semi-relevant. I did the same thing. I played it because I was like, okay, I have to play Half-Life 2. And I finished Half-Life 1, and I feel like I remember sitting there going, why did I just play through this whole game? And then I fired up 2, and I hated it. So I didn't play it again for about 6 months or probably more than that. And then I thought, everybody loves this game. I must have missed something. So I fired it up again from the beginning, and I hated it. And I must have done that about 6 different times where I tried to play it and I went, this game is so standard. Why does everyone think it's so good? You just walk from place to place and guys lean out over the corner or whatever. You shoot them in the head and you move on. It's boring. For some reason, like the 7th time I played that game, I really liked it. Matt, if you're not going to get sucked in right away to Half-Life 2, just take it off the list. You're never going to play it.
It's one of those games that I'm going to buy on a deal at some point, and then I'm going to try and have a weekend where I just play Half-Life games. One of those sorts of things that never actually happen. But it's all right, because Valve will have my money, so that's what they want. All good.
Yeah, Gabe Newell, or whatever.
I'm trying to think what else there is that I've never played. I should have done.
The Blasphemers list, I think, is what most people will think of this as in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah. You know, I mean, this. I'm 23, I had to think about that. I'm 23, and I grew up in England at a time when perhaps we weren't, I mean, we're still not, but the early 90s, we didn't get games. We never got, I don't think we ever got Chrono Trigger. I know we never got, Super Mario RPG. So there's a lot of older games from the SNES and earlier that I was either too young to appreciate or that I just didn't have access to. But by the time I got to play them either through emulators or whatever, it was at a time when I'd played, say, Final Fantasy VII. So my view of RPGs and what they should be was kind of skewed. Then if you go forward 20 years, there's just not the time to play the retro games and do them justice.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, because from the those games, the jump to the PS1, and likewise the jump from the PS2 to current generation consoles, it's just massive gaps are filled, which is not going to be possible in future generations. It's always going to, unless we go into virtual reality gaming and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those problems that find a lot of people. They're very nostalgic. People will sit there and tell you that this generation has sucked compared to previous generations. And the reason that they're saying that is because they're remembering the top 9 or 10 games that they played when they're a kid. They look back at the SNES and go, oh my God, that catalogue, that was just every single game was a hit. And that's not all true. For every Chrono Trigger, you had 10 versions of Bart's Nightmare, you know? Which was in itself a fine game, but that if there was ever a game that needed DLC, that was it.
There was a lot of garbage for, like, during the Genesis and Super Nintendo era. I remember probably every weekend it would be like school's out or whatever. My parents are taking me to the rental store where my brother and I are each going to pick up a game and it's going to be great. And I don't really ever remember getting a game that was good, like, ever. When you're just judging, I mean, at that time, I was a kid, I'm basically just judging it on the front cover. Why did I rent Lawnmower Man for Super Nintendo? I don't know.
I think a better question is, why wouldn't you rent Lawnmower Man for Nintendo?
If you've played Lawnmower Man for Super Nintendo, you would know why you shouldn't rent that game.
I feel the fact that we're saying this so often means that we should probably seek out the developers for Lawnmower Man on Super Nintendo and try and get some royalties or something.
This is the most their game has been mentioned since the day it released.
And then it was just by saying, don't buy Lawnmower Man for Super Nintendo.
I hope it was that was what people were saying when it came out. Because that game was real shit. It was garbage.
Just straight up, get to the point.
Yeah, I don't think we're entitled to those royalties anymore.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic game. Go back in time and buy that game so that we can get our royalties.
You definitely won't be talking about it and complaining in a podcast 20 years later.
Right. It's myself from the past who heard this. Now I know why I rented it.
It's like the ghost in the Discworld game. We have to find out more. We have to go back.
I made my own life miserable from the future. Wasted a weekend. Here's an interesting... Okay, I shouldn't say interesting. Here's a story about a retro game. I originally convinced my parents that I wanted, I think it was Genesis, because I saw commercials for a game, maybe you guys will be familiar with the game, called Toad Jam and Earl. For some reason, I thought it looked like the coolest game ever. And so I was like, I have to have a Genesis. I have to play this game. They finally got me a Genesis. We used to go to the rental store, Blockbuster or whatever it was. I would always be looking for Toad Jam and Earl, and I would see the case there. Somebody would have checked it out, and I probably just liked the rad attitude that those two characters had or whatever the hell it was. And despite constantly trying to get it, I never managed to rent that game, and to this day, I still have not played the game that I bought a Genesis in order to play. And I don't want to now.
You know that... That is probably the first game that I remember playing. Like, if I go back 22 years, I have memories of that game. Except that I don't. I remember playing it, but when I actually... It came out on digital distribution services last year, and I bought it, and I tried it out, and it was like, this is not the game that I played. They have changed Toad Jam and Earl at some point over the last 20 years. This is not a game that I played. And to this day, I have no idea. I remember that it was Toad Jam and Earl that I played, but I don't remember what I've got it mixed up with. Because Toad Jam and Earl sucked, but the game that I got it mixed up with was fantastic. So, yeah.
Are you thinking of Booger Man, the seminal hit for Super Nintendo? You want to talk about games that were great back in the day? How about a game where you dress as a fat man in a green spandex suit and then you eat a chili pepper to fart flames and fly around?
Where can I get that?
Oh, man. Yeah, games didn't used to be that good. Why do we all think that they were?
I don't know.
It's just the startup point for every now that has become big franchise. So... I guess, like, they just look back to that point as a starting point for, like, the greatness. Like, the Zelda games.
See, I think they're an example of things that have held up well. I mean, you have to go in knowing that, oh, this game is going to be limited. But the original Final Fantasies, the original Zeldas, you can tell that they were struggling to do things with the technology that they had. Mm-hmm. But then you come across things that... It was like just half-assed. It was just like, okay, this is the game we want to make, and this is what we can actually do. This is what we have the money to do.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. The video game industry wasn't even that big back then, was it?
No, well, that's it. I mean, it was... I remember watching an episode of Roseanne where they bought a Nintendo, and it was like the most expensive thing that the people had ever bought. And that would have been around the early 90s, kind of 92, 93 that episode aired. So there was obviously an awareness of what it was, and it was obviously popular enough to end up on Roseanne. You know, I think that we've come such a long way, and it's been such a mainstream thing that now the people that were there at the beginning of the 90s liked people to know that they were there at the beginning of the... I actually played Metroid when it first came out.
Right.
I was there when The Legend of Zelda launched. And they kind of start believing what they're saying. I mean, I'm not going to be the person that says every single game this generation is fantastic, but I do get the feeling that on the whole, the quality has been more consistent this generation than perhaps any other before. I remember buying games on PS2 that lasted for about 2 hours, and I'd spent £40 on. I remember buying games on the N64 that would cost me probably $80 in today's money, and they would last me an hour and a half. I remember one game where I drove around knocking down buildings. It was basically a racing game, and that was all you'd do. Each map was exactly the same, and it cost me, because I liked the front of the box, £60.
Wow. Yeah.
And yet, these were the best games ever made,
You know,
in some people's opinion.
I sort of feel like there's a little bit of you had to think that every game back then was the best game ever made because you were a kid and you had if you got a game, it was either because you convinced your parents to get it for Christmas or your birthday, or like me, you got to go rent games or whatever. But new games were like few and far between. If you were, you had to enjoy every single one you got.
Yeah, there was definitely a that for sure.
Don't we owe current generations and everything to that mindset, though? Because if everybody thought that each game was a load of crap, then there wouldn't have been such a boom in the industry, and
That's
this and that.
true, yeah. I think it helps that, you know, people we had the Resident Evil series as an example, and it was pretty popular. I think the first one sold, you know, a few million, which on the PS1 is all the more impressive. And obviously, over time, it got ported and it sold more and more and more.
Yeah.
But there came a point at the turn of the millennium where there just was no one playing the Resident Evil games. They'd sell a million, you know, the remake, which everyone says is just this the best Resident Evil game. It sold 1.5 million copies. Everyone that has played it, pretty much everyone that has played it, has bought it pre-owned in the years since.
Wow.
And that came out in 2002, 2003. Came out in the same year that the film came out, and the first film is pretty dreadful. It's fine if you want to watch a zombie film, but there's not much more to it. It's sitting there with some popcorn and shouting, "He's behind you! There's a zombie," and that's about it. And that is the point of that film. And yet it pretty much made the Resident Evil series successful again. Resident Evil 4 sold 7 million copies. And a lot of that is down to the fact that Resident Evil became higher in the public consciousness. And I think that's a lot. When you start getting consciousness, that sort of consciousness start to get people to be more accepting of a genre or of a medium.
Yeah, could have been. Speaking of Resident Evil, I tried playing 4, and like we mentioned last podcast, where you said you have a problem with like survival horror games. Like for example, Dead Space and Resident Evil 4, there was no way I could possibly get through the first level of those games.
No.
I don't understand how I'm the only person who loves horror games out of almost
When
everyone I know.
I was a kid, I watched my dad play Resident Evil, and now I'm happy to sit there and watch someone else play it, but I don't like feeling me.
The
I like to
pressure.
relax, and I don't like feeling like the developer is trying to find ways to make me jump, because I think that's really cheap. If I'm staring at something and a face just comes up at the screen, that's going to have a reaction on my heart rate and on blood pressure and all that. You know, that's just a natural reaction. I don't like thinking that that's the whole point of the game. And I never felt that the Resident Evil series was strong enough as a game to, until 4, that it was strong enough as a game to go beyond that. Now, the gameplay wasn't great. The story was bloody stupid. I don't care what anyone says. The storyline to those games matches Metal Gear Solid with the just ridiculousness, and that's a lot down to the script. Come, little fishy, sit on my hook. And you know, I've sat there. I played Code Veronica, and I've watched my girlfriend play them all in the last 12 months. And not so much that it's the horror, that other than the horror, there's not a lot there. I saw a played space, and again, other than the horror, There's not a lot there. BioShock, I'm not even really thinking as a horror game.
I think
Yeah,
that's
it's
fair.
just you, there's a sense of dread in the game, but not much of horror around it.
Yeah, and I think if they could build a game, I'm trying to think of, there was a add-on DLC pack for Heavy Rain called The Taxidermist. Thinking back, went inside a house because you thought it was the Origami, and played as, and I forget her name. No, it's gone. Anyway, you
Some
played as her,
girl.
and some girl. And went inside this house, and there is just stuffed animals everywhere. And you explore, and you go up to the top floor, and there's just a bunch of women that have been stuffed and put into various poses. And then the guy comes in downstairs, and he is searching the house. He can see that someone's been in there, and he's searching the house for you. And you have to move while he's looking for you. And that's about as close to proper horror as I've felt while playing a game, because the tension was just fantastic. And come to think of it, the stealth genre as a whole, probably the best for that, because it comes out of nowhere. You'd get a sense that someone is hunting for you. Maybe something like Manhunt, which is another one I've never been, should have done. Maybe something like Manhunt. I kind of get the feeling that that would have that feeling a lot more.
I've
Yeah,
been a
actually.
detractor. I've been a detractor of Heavy Rain at certain points, but you can say what you want about that game, but those points where you are doing something and then all of a sudden they split the screen and they show you what somebody else is up to, and you know at some point these two people are going to collide with spectacularly terrible results. Those were the best parts of that game, I think.
Yeah, as a whole, it was just an amazing game.
It was good. Joe told me how fantastic it was. I bought it a few days later, and because obviously he's in the States, he told me how fantastic it was. This is going to be the best game ever, blah, 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 blah. Then I bought it, and I didn't speak to him for a few days. And then the next time I spoke to him, I said, "You were completely right. I played through Heavy Rain. It blew me away." And he said, "I've been reading online, and actually, I hate it now." And that's pretty much, so you can't take Joe's opinion on Heavy Rain too seriously.
Okay, I feel I need to break this down now. I still like that game. In fact, if I could pick that game up for dirt cheap, it's been long enough that if I played it again, I would really, really probably like it. But I feel like that's one of those games where if I had just played it once and whatever happened happened, and I just drew a line under it and said, that's it. It would have been great, even though I got the worst possible ending. I mean, everyone who was not the killer was dead or disgraced in some way. And the killer just, like, wandered off. Like, oh, I did a great job, I guess. Woohoo! And, like, wandered off into the sunset. But, there were so many points in that game where they did these strange things, and the one that bothers me the most, even now, is there's a point where the girl, like, I don't remember her name either. She's talking to the killer's mom, and the mom leans in and whispers the name of the killer to her. And to me, that was amazing, because I assumed that the choices you had made throughout the game would lead to her whispering a different name to her each time. Like, depending on what you did, it could be this guy, it could even be the FBI guy, or whatever. And I was like, this is amazing. I can play this game four different times, make different choices, and it'll be a different killer every time, or whatever. And then that turned out not to be the case. It's always the same guy. That was really frustrating to me, because why were we still keeping it a secret from the player at that point? She could have just said it out loud if it was not going to be different people, potentially, each time. It kind of makes me wonder if they
And it was
planned to have it be different people, and then they didn't have time, or they didn't think they could make it work story-wise.
the guy that everyone liked. That's part of the problem as well. They made him such a likable guy till the last kind of 30 minutes, if that.
Right, yeah, as you, there was a pretty big disconnect, I feel like, between the times you played as him, and he seemed like such a good guy, like you said, I would go out of my way to do all of the nicest things with him, and then at the end, it just seemed like, oh, actually, he's the murderer. Just because of some strange, like, trauma he suffered as a child. He's the nicest guy ever until it rains, and then he really wants to murder somebody by drowning.
Twist: Heavy Rain is actually gremlins in disguise.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think I finally understand that game now.
I'm looking forward to
Spoiler alert, by the way.
the next one. What, Beyond? Beyond Two Souls or
something. Yeah, that looks good. I was excited by that because it's got Ellen Page in. I really quite like her as an actress, and I think that she's always done kind of roles that suit her. So I think that choosing this means that it's going to be at least passable in terms of the story, and in terms of the acting, it's going to be stellar.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I remember reading when that game was first announced, or shortly after it was announced, there was somebody who wrote an article about it, and he was frustrated because, for people who don't know, there's in the game you play as a ghost or something, and you can possess different people to, like, help her get through the situation she's in or something. I'm not 100% clear on it. But I know that somebody asked David Cage from Quantic Dream, the guy who comes up with all these crazy games, how come you can only possess, like, some people and not other people? Is there, like, a cool storyline reason, or is it just, like, arbitrary, you only can possess these people because I only want you to possess these people? And David Cage said, oh, it's just arbitrary. There's no story reason for it. I just don't want you possessing some people. That seemed kind of strange.
But, you know, I almost didn't buy Heavy Rain, because I don't know how, if either of you have played... It was called Fahrenheit here. I think it was Indigo Prophecy in the States.
Yeah, that's correct.
The game that they made before. I played that game through to the end, and it was pretty much Heavy Rain. There wasn't a huge amount of action sequences. It all boiled down to big-time events, basically. And I got to the end, and I think you're in a hospital or an orphanage or something. You go up to a roof, and you confront the bad guy, and that whole sequence... it saved when you went into the orphanage hospital, and you could not finish it. I must have done it about 200 times, and the last quick time event, it came up a square or something, and it needed to be something else, and it just did not work. The square would be on the screen for about maybe 5 seconds, and no matter how many times you pressed it, nothing would happen. You'd get knocked over, you'd die, and you had to do the whole thing again. And for me, it was just... the crappiest thing ever, because the story was pretty good. I mean, I can't remember it very well now, but basically a guy becomes a superhero just randomly. What I remember. And so it was quite interesting. And the game just did not work. I could not finish it. And pretty sure that I did it again from the beginning, and I got to the same bit. And again, it just would not let me get past that bit. So long as Beyond is actually completable, it might be good.
You know, I feel like if they could make a fantastic game, if you could somehow put David Cage and sort of like the celebrity cachet that he apparently brings to these games and team him up with Telltale to let them do the actual game and puzzle designing, man, you'd really be onto something.
You know, I think we're getting to a point with developers now where some of them are getting a bit too serious about it. I mean, the person that I always mention when I'm talking about obnoxious developers is Jonathan Blow, because that guy made one game. That guy made one game 6 years ago, and it was a decent game, but it wasn't fantastic. And he spent the last 6 years telling every other developer what they're doing wrong. And that just seems to me like, you know, even on the PS4, he turned up at the PS4 event, and didn't he say something like, what I'm going to show you now is a little bit different because it doesn't have guns in it. And the guys from, they'd shown Infamous Second Son, which is a guy blasting around, people are shooting at him and just using kick-ass powers and big explosions. And so they came off, the crowd was hyped, and then he came out, what I'm about to show you is different because it hasn't got guns in it. And it was just, it was like, yeah, they are going to kick your ass when you get back in there.
Oh, it's in the name if you think about it.
Yeah.
But The Witness, isn't a new game called The Witness?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I like, from what they showed at the PS4 reveal, it just looks kind of, the environment's nice and everything, but... remember those puzzles that were like opening bridges and stuff? Those seem really monotonous if it's stuck to that.
I got exactly the same thing from it. He was there saying, so we couldn't, he was saying something like, isn't it terrible when you're just in one place and you turn around and in our game, you're never more than 20 sec away from, you're never more than 20, sorry, I just got a Facebook message. I'll start this little segment again. You can edit it out. When you... I'm going to close Facebook. And it was, he said something like, in our game, you're never more than 20 seconds away from a different world. And I just thought, well, all that means is that you're not really putting very much effort into each individual world. It's all good and well if you can walk into a bloody castle and look off the out at the top and see cowboy land and alien land, but that's all it's going to be. It's going to be a castle with some puzzles in, and over there is going to be a saloon with some puzzles in. You know, there's going to be limitations on each world, and to be quite honest, I'd just rather run around and cowboys or shoot some aliens or shoot some cowboys and aliens and just have at it. At least it's a type of gameplay. At least it's going to offer some entertainment value.
I was just going to say, I think the thing that frustrates me most is whenever you get somebody like that. Now, I'm a big fan of Braid. When The Witness comes out, everybody could say, this is absolute shit, and I'll probably buy it anyway, just because. But it frustrates me when people like him get up there, that, you know, the artists, and they get up there and they have this strange, like, supposition that you, if you enjoy the games where you're going to shoot people and blow things up, that you can't enjoy the artsy games. It seems like they're just trying to say, okay, well, that game's for those people. They can go blow things up, and the classy people can come over here and we'll just solve a puzzle and be within 10 seconds of a whole new world. And it's like, don't tell me that I can't enjoy both. I feel like Bioshock
Infinite is a really terrible marketing strategy.
Yeah, no kidding. I feel like Bioshock Infinite is a pretty good mix of two different types of things. You've got the, like, hardcore philosophy guy who's sitting there reading everything into the ending. That's me. And then you've got the guy who just likes shooting people's faces and blowing things up. That's also me. They're not different people. We can enjoy different things at different times.
Yeah, Bioshock Infinite is a perfect example of mixing in gameplay elements and story and everything.
But then you get people like David Cage, and this is the whole reason that I even brought it up. You get people like David Cage, who, 2 weeks ago, he made a statement. I don't know if it was in an interview, but he said that games like Lollipop Chainsaw are ruining the gaming industry. Now, Lollipop Chainsaw, I've not actually played it, but my understanding of it is that it is basically just a big joke. You play as the most over-sexualized character ever. She's a cheerleader. All the camera angles are kind of from below her skirt, so you can see her underwear. It is just the most kind of wretched idea. They have just run with it. And the idea of the gameplay is that you run around cutting up zombies and just has the cheesiest lines when she's doing it. It's just stupidly violent and there's blood everywhere. And David Cage said that games like that are what a spin. Gaming industry being taken seriously. And as soon as I read that, my first thought was, okay, he doesn't get the joke. He doesn't get that they're doing it on purpose to show how violent and sexist the gaming industry are. And if you can't get that joke, then it kind of comes to the point where it seems like the games you're making are a little bit too serious. It looks like you're going to be a film director who is making it interactive, rather than Steven Spielberg, who can do really serious films and then fun films at the same time.
Right. Quentin Tarantino, another example.
Yeah, that's that's that same attitude. Like, we can't have everything in games. Games should just be what I like or whatever. But it's just like movies, though. Like, if you think of David Cage as a Christopher Nolan type, I don't know necessarily that they're on the same level, but you get what I mean. And then Lollipop Chainsaw is like a Judd Apatow film. There's room for both. I don't want to play Lollipop Chainsaw because it looks like a piece of shit. But that
man,
doesn't mean I'm going to say...
Leader and you chop up zombies.
That's true. Zombies. I don't know. No, I'm not going to play everything with zombies. That game looks stupid as hell. But I'm not saying that the people who wanted to play it and laugh at it and they were in on the joke, or even the people who were just like, oh my god, it's a cheerleader and there's zombies. Whatever, man. Play what you want. It's your free time.
Yep.
Anyway, before we finish this out, I wanted to make sure we touch on the guy who went on Twitter strangely defending the always on Xbox, even though they haven't officially said that it's true yet. Have they? I don't think.
No, they haven't. And it was quite interesting because a Major Nelson, I'm actually going to look this up because I don't want to put words into anyone's mouth. But Major Nelson, once all of this had kicked off, he made a post on his blog. Okay, here we go. It's just called Official Statement on What Was Said Yesterday. Okay, so I wanted to give you the official Microsoft statement regarding some comments you may have seen yesterday. We apologize for the inappropriate comments made by an employee on Twitter yesterday. This person is not a spokesperson for Microsoft, and his personal views do not reflect the customer-centric approach we take to our products or how we would communicate directly with our loyal customers. We are sorry if this offended anyone. However, we have not made any announcements about our product roadmap and have no further comment on this matter. So that's the official statement. Now, I just want to point out that that's all fine in PR lingo, but they don't actually say that what he said wasn't true.
Yeah. Taking into consideration what customers think and everything, watch the Xbox announcement be pushed back a couple of months just to fix that.
It's frustrating whenever you know what's going on when, if someone is saying something that is perceived as inherently negative by most consumers, I would say, I don't think there's anybody like, yeah, always on is fine, I don't mind playing Skyrim only when my internet works or whatever. I mean, there might be some people who go, I don't mind it, but I don't think there's anyone saying, yes, it should absolutely be this way, among consumers, among developers, maybe. But whenever there's something like this that everyone seems to think is negative, if I was a company and it wasn't true, I would just come out and shut it down. I would say, this isn't true. Unless they just want the press, they figure any sort of press is decent press as long as their name is out there or something. But they don't say that. They just say, we haven't made an announcement, which is the same as saying, yeah, this is all true.
They could be trying to lower expectations, and then suddenly at the press conference, suddenly everything's amazing and everything's just working perfectly, no internet connection required, this and that. It could just be like PR.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible, but I think there's going to be a lot of people pre-ordering the PS4 now who perhaps were waiting on it. I think this has actually had a negative effect on how people are viewing it, and I think the time, because the way that I'm getting it, and it's something I saw on a message board the other day, and it makes so much sense, and it's something that people were, some crazy people were criticizing Sony for as well, and that's that when Apple announce a new product every year, they announce it, say, mid-year, then it's out a fortnight later. It's like, we've got the iPad 2, it'll be available now! And a lot of people don't necessarily know much about the gaming industry were saying that maybe Sony should have done the same thing with the PS4, that they should have announced it much closer to the release date, because now they've got to fill a year with hype for the PS4. And what some people are saying is that perhaps Microsoft are being so stum on it because they think that they are going to kind of copy the Apple way of doing it. They're going to say, okay, we've got this device, Durango, and it's going to come out in 3 months' time, or whatever. But what this means is that anything that comes out ahead of time is going to really knock them, as they're going to have to, any negative PR, they're going to have to pair that over a much smaller time.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if they did have the announcement and then release it a month or two later, then that would push consumers towards their product, because games would be available for it at release, and I'm sure a pretty high population of Microsoft customers would go and buy the new Xbox because it would be so far closer than the PS4 release date.
That's true. I mean, people, because the PS4 announcement was so awesome, because the console looks great, because they've managed to, the thing that a lot of people were impressed with PS4 is that this attitude that Sony had at the beginning of this generation is just gone. They've said, okay, we've spoke to developers and we've made a console that is going to last and that they can enjoy working on. And I think that's what blew people away. And I kind of get the feeling that people are happy with Sony and they... Oh, I forget what I was saying. I've bored myself. That's
again.
How bloody terrible it was.
No, I'm all for the PS4,
okay.
Yeah.
I completely feel... I'm sure it was a very good thing. Sure it was.
We've just been on the air too long. That's the problem. I think you're just losing your mind.
I think that's what it is.
But I do feel like it's worth mentioning that everyone seems to think, if you have good internet, if you live where broadband is, you know, widely used, it seems like everyone in the world has it, until you don't. Like, I lived for years, and I had broadband, it wasn't a big deal, and then I moved literally less than, like, 2 miles away, and now I have satellite. They don't run cable lines here. I mean, that's why my internet connection's so terrible. The internet connection just dies, and the router has to be reset 3 or 4 times a day, just because. I mean, so I'm not buying an Xbox that has to be connected all day. I'm not going to stop playing a game because the thing goes out, save it, turn the machine off so it doesn't kick me out within 3 minutes, then go upstairs, unplug the router, unplug the modem, wait for 5 minutes each, plug it all back in, hope it connects, and then go back downstairs, turn on my Xbox for 10 minutes, load the game back up. Oh, the internet's out again. Fuck you.
I'm pretty sure that is a form of torture for some people.
Like, there's no way in hell. And some places,
yeah, no,
they don't
if
even...
it's always on, there's no way.
Some places, they don't even have satellite. I mean, I know people who are still using the just dial-up. This U.S., in the U.S., this country is huge, and the entire middle of it is just giant open farmland where nobody wants to put any technology at all. I think they just live in, like, dirt huts out there. They're not going to be playing an always-on Xbox.
I think what they have to even out, what they have to work out, is whether or not there are enough people with decent enough internet that will buy it. And obviously they've done the sums and they think, yes, okay, if we sell this to, I don't know, how many... I mean, even if you consider this generation, the Xbox has only sold about 80 million, which seems like a huge amount, but that's only really 10 or 11 cities worth. And there are thousands and thousands of cities around the world, each with people that are becoming more interested in gaming and who have a fine internet connection. So I guess what they're thinking is that they've reached 80 million this generation, some of whom won't be going with them to the next generation, but there's loads of people who will, if they can advertise it right. I mean, these are the people that sold, like, I think the last time I heard anything is like 15 million Kinects. Like four
I was
games
just
for
about
that thing.
To mention Kinect, yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, these are Microsoft is fantastic at marketing things. And there's a lot of people on the internet who like to bitch about things that Microsoft do, like Windows 8. I run Windows 8 and it's better than Windows 7. All you've got to do is get used to the start menu, which, again, is better than Windows 7 once you get used to it. But there are people on the internet that will bitch and moan about it nonstop because they changed that one little thing. But Windows 8 is still doing pretty well, I think. And these are the people that will market the hell out of the next Xbox. Got to think that their big sellers this generation were XGold and the apps. So next generation, they're going to be pushing Xbox Live Gold and the apps. If they can say, if you pay for Xbox Live, we will turn off the always-on necessity, they are going to make so much money off it. Yeah, all right, it'll piss off a few people online, but people already paying for gold are just going to go, all right, I'm already paying for gold.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like this whole, the whole announcement about Always On, it just feels like such a natural outgrowth of what we already have this generation, doesn't it? And here's what I mean. It's like, you've got your Xbox Live. If you want to play games online, which seems like it should just be a God-given right, as far as I'm concerned, I already pay for internet. You have to pay extra money for Live, and a lot of people think the service is worth it. It's really good. Then you get the PS3. The service wasn't as good for a long time. I would say they're pretty close now, if not equivalent, right? But you don't pay anything for it. But then they come out with Plus, which is like, if you want to pay the money, you get extras on top of it. For Xbox, you're paying for a base level. For PS4, you get the base level, or PS3, you get the base level free, you pay for extra. And then I feel like it's the same thing for the next generation. Xbox is saying, you have to have internet to play our console. PS4 is saying, well, guess what, you don't have to have internet. But if you do have the internet all the time, look at all the extras you get. Like the, what is it, Gaikai, the cloud stuff. You can download a game and play it while it's downloading. That, to me, is what should be rewarded. Not, okay, here's all the reasons my console sucks because there are restrictions to when you're allowed to play it.
I think that Microsoft aren't going to even try and match PlayStation Plus service. What they're going to try and do is devalue it. They're going to try and say that what we have is better, and it doesn't matter if you get some free games or whatever, because this is what we offer. And it might not be games, but they will try and devalue the PlayStation Plus service somehow.
Yeah, I agree. And I was just having a conversation again with a friend, and I put it out there that if 10 or maybe 20% of the Xbox Live Gold using population boycotted the service for, 3 months or so, they would lose so much money, Microsoft. Microsoft would rethink all their steps.
That's true, but you've also got to think, again, I haven't got the numbers to hand, but I'm sure that I saw some that they would made something like 127 million off of Xbox Live Gold. And I don't know how old that number is, or if it's even a number that I might have just made it up. That's a distinct possibility. But I just think about that. 127 million for something that Sony have taken upon themselves to give for free. Now, they are making 127 million off it. They are making that. That's not including costs. I mean, you could lose 20%. That would still be, 100 million almost.
Yeah. I agree with that. But it would be kind of an eye-opener. I would hope, because Microsoft is just getting worse and worse and worse by the generation.
Well, I don't know if things have changed in the few years since I had to do it, but have you ever tried to cancel an Xbox Live Gold subscription? You're better off like getting your name legally
it
changed and closing
terrible.
Your bank account.
I just kept on getting charged on a credit card that was not valid anymore for about 6 months or so. And then I finally realized with the recurring statement, and I was just starstruck. It's like, what the fuck's going on? Who's charging my ghost card?
Yeah, there's no button you can just click somewhere that says cancel my subscription. Like most people, they just bought an Xbox and they sign up for Gold, and every month it comes out and they just don't think about it. But when you have to cancel that thing, I mean, it's a chore. You have to call and talk to somebody. You have to wait on their bullshit helpline like, oh, we're sorry, we're taking a lot of calls right now. You're going to have to wait for about 20, 30 minutes before we're able to pick up. And then half the time you talk to them, you tell them you want to cancel. They say, okay, that's taken care of. And a month later, $15 comes out of your account again.
Exactly. It's ridiculous.
Well,
I'm all for PlayStation Plus. I really enjoy the Plus service.
Plus has been, when I first came out, I was skeptical about it, I think. But, man, you're making money in games by paying that each month. It's crazy how much stuff they give you for free.
It's unbelievable, yeah. I got The Cave for free this last week, and I'm so glad I did not pay for that. it's not, I didn't really like it.
I quite enjoyed it. It was nice so long as you remember that these are the people that made Monkey Island 20 years ago.
I tried to play through with that mindset, and at some point it just got so tedious, because with the three characters, you have to go back and forth and back and forth. And
oh,
the
I
end,
got that, yeah.
I was like, oh, God, just when is it going to end?
I just tried to think that perhaps in terms of that there was absolutely no pressure over the last 20 years, except that you can play it with a controller now. That's the way I went in with it. And I wasn't disappointed. It was pretty much what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, fair enough.
So 20 years ago, they made Monkey Island, and at the same time, they were playing The Lost Vikings, and they thought, we should combine these, and 20 years later, they finally managed it. And now you're upset, because it doesn't work that well.
I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. I thought the dialogue was very funny. The cave actually has a voice.
Yeah, and I love the dialogue. Yeah.
And it is so funny. So well written. And it's just a shame that I'm going to say this, and Joe, you're going to hate me for it, but I've never thought that Tim Schafer is that great a developer.
I have to agree with you. I would have to. I think he comes off as a little obnoxious as well.
Brutal Legend is terrible.
Yeah, it's not that good. But it's Psychonauts, and Psychonauts is the game. That's the game you want to play if you like Tim Schafer, and even now it's been so long. Probably.
It's kind of a one-hit wonder, though, when you think about
it.
Grim Fandango was fantastic. Monkey Island was fantastic.
Maniac Mansion's where it's at. Love that game. Day of the Tentacle Boat.
That's before my time, Joe.
Yeah, I'm an old one. I remember playing Maniac Mansion on the NES, using the little D-pad to scroll a mouse down to the bottom to say pick up, and then scroll it back up to the key, and then scroll back down to use in, and then scroll up to the door, and it was like, ugh. I'd still play it right now, probably, but man, it would be frustrating. Okay, somehow we started this talking about games like Bioshock Infinite, now we're talking about Maniac Mansion. I think it's time to call it quits. So we'll put a cap on it for this week, and we'll presumably be back next week. Hopefully the quality will be a little better next week. I should be getting a mic. Everything's going to be great. I'm telling you, this show is really growing. People are going to love it. But for this week, thanks for joining me, fellas.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, diamond. You're a star.
Oh, don't stop now. You've only scratched the surface of my greatness.
You're the most beautiful, attractive podcast host that there has ever been.
Jonathan Blow would be proud.
I think that's.
And you know how he got his
stop.
Name.
All right, that's it. We're out.